Full Service Radio programming is available on our website, fullserviceradio.org, and as a podcast, thanks to Simplecast. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Hey, you're listening to Pineapple Radio on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Atara.
And I'm your other host, Arielle. Welcome. We're so excited for today's episode here with Jessica Koslow of Squirrel in L.A. Welcome.
Honored to have you here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
She's in D.C. for a couple of days cooking at Rose's Luxury and also doing an event with Pineapple, which is really exciting, tomorrow morning. And we're going to dig into a conversation today that is all about her style, identity, and values, and learning more about her food career as well as her D.C. past, which is a fun fact that we'll dig into.
Yeah.
Before we do, just a little brief recap on Pineapple and who we are and what we do for first-time listeners. We are a community for women who love food. We host events in real life in Washington, D.C., New York, and San Francisco. We have a newsletter every week where we share the things in the world of women and food that we love. We have Pine Floor Pantry, which is our editorial series where we peek into the kitchens of women that we admire. Jessica, hopefully we'll get you on there at some point in time. We know chefs have, you know, very unique kitchens.
Or sometimes they have nothing in their fridge, too, because right. Everything is at the kitchen in their restaurant.
Yeah.
Interesting either way, though.
Yeah, totally.
And last but not least, we have this radio show, which is our way of having conversations with women, sometimes one, sometimes two women in conversation with each other, to again explore our style, identity, and values through food. So thank you for joining us.
Awesome. And yeah, I would add to that that another thing that we do, our guiding philosophy is the idea of Pine Four, which is our idea that admiring another woman, woman-made product, woman-led movement is powerful and it creates community. And that's what we do on radio across all of our content is we celebrate other women and their style around food. So speaking of Pine Four, each week, Arielle and I like to check in with each other about different things that we have been loving in food, specifically things that we stock in our kitchens, because we believe that what we put in our kitchens is a greater reflection of our style than even our closets and our beauty cabinets, quite frankly. So with that, Arielle, what have you been loving in the world of women and food and products?
Yeah, so I just got in the mail my Brightland olive oil. It's a company out of LA, and they just started about, I think they launched a month ago, and it's California olive oil and in a beautiful package, and they have two varieties called Awake and Alive. I don't actually know the olive variety, but I'm excited to dig into that.
Yeah. Awesome. It's cool to see well-designed olive oil. It's not something you come across every day.
Exactly. It's pretty enough to put on my counter.
Right.
Have you heard of Wonder Valley?
Oh, we love Wonder Valley.
Right. I'm sure that's been on the show before. But
yeah.
Have you been to their oil shop in Joshua Tree?
Yes. Yeah.
Is it as magical as it looks?
It totally is. The photos and the real life are very much in sync.
Gotta make it out there one day.
It's another women-owned olive oil business. Mm-hmm. Allison and her husband started it, and I don't know her last name. I just sounds like I know her, but I just follow her on Instagram.
She's like Prince, just Allison.
And they opened up a beautiful shop in Joshua Tree that has their olive oil and other products.
Yeah.
Cool. Tara, what about you?
Yeah, it's the summer in D.C. It's very hot, so I've been eating a lot of ice cream. And I need to shout out Frankie and Joe's out of Seattle. They are a plant-based, organic, naturally flavored ice cream company. They have really unique, wonderful flavors that are delicious. They have a golden milk and turmeric ice cream. They have a charcoal and salty caramel, which I love. And they sent Ariel and I a package a few months ago with four flavors, and they're awesome. We thank them for doing that.
Yum.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Frankie and Joe's. All right, cool. Well, we're going to dig into our show now on that. Definitely check out Frankie and Joe's, check out Brightland, but we are so honored to introduce today's topic and today's guest. Today on our show, we're chatting with one of our personal heroes, Jessica Koslow. She's the girl behind Squirrel, aka the restaurant at the forefront of the California cooking renaissance. It's food that's both virtuous, delicious, and oh so seasonal. Bacon lovers and vegans obsess over it equally, and there's always something new to dig into. Tons of innovation around her menu. We love Squirrel. We love her cookbook. We love her jams and her swag, and we're so excited to have her here and talk about her style, identity, and values through food. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you, guys. This is beautiful.
So when was the last time you were in D.C.?
Ooh, the last time I was in D.C. was when I graduated from grad school, and that was in 2005. So it's been a long time. It's been such an amazing experience to land here and walk around and be like, do I remember this place? And see a lot of familiar things, and then also see and experience a lot of new new spots. So it's pretty special.
Yeah. DC has changed a lot in the last 13 years.
it has.
From its restaurant scene to, you know, so much in the city. Tell us, you've been here for like 24 hours. Where have you seen? Where have you been?
That's true. We landed yesterday morning at 5:30 and we were led into Rose's Luxury to drop off our items, went to Little Pearl, had a little coffee. Mm. Such a beautiful space. It was a carriage house, and it's amazing to see people sitting and eating underneath where horses would feed. It's just beautiful. And we came back to this hotel, The Line, and it's gorgeous. And last night we went to the Dabney and had some really delicious food from Jeremiah. Just you can feel the southern roots, mm-hmm. you know, in his cooking. What is that fish that he has on the menu? The Chesapeake toad?
The sugar toads, yeah.
That's a total win. Mm. That dish, he'll never be able to take that off the menu.
It's a mainstay.
Yeah, it's a mainstay. And also, for my husband is a wings guy. I'm not, but like it's such a wings dish. Mm-hmm. It really hits the mark on that. And then we went over to Bad Saint and just had such a delicious vibe of a meal, like all of it from hospitality it doesn't even have 20 seats, does it? But the hospitality to the food, all of it was really nuanced in a way that was, I'll take that memory back with me to Squirrel for sure. So, you know, it's been a very quick 24 hours and it's been full of delicious moments. So
that's awesome. Yeah. We're super happy to hear that. I think when people hear we're based in D.C., there's a lot of preconceived notions about this city, certainly stereotypes, and people haven't associated D.C. with an awesome culinary scene. Certainly, like in the last year or two, Bon App named us, you know, the top city, food city.
And as someone coming from Los Angeles, where I think that the restaurant culture is really diverse with both high and low and a variety of ethnic cuisines that are also quick or also more of a service-oriented restaurant. I think this city is showing a lot of range with the food options that are provided. It's really amazing.
Exciting times, yeah.
Totally. All right, well, we'll have more good noms before you go mm-hmm. back west, but let's dig into your background.
Okay.
And you know, there's so much that we admire about your journey, and many of us know you based on your, you know, resume today, from being a James Beard nominated chef to an acclaimed restaurateur, best-selling cookbook author. You know, we can go on and on. Whoa. With awesome accolades that are associated with you and Squirrel. But how did, you know, we'd love to go back to where it all started. Mm-hmm. How did you get here?
How did I get here? Well, it's actually funny. In D.C., I was a grad student here, and all I wanted to do was cook. And I actually, at the time, again, this is 2005, I'd gone to Baked and Wired, and I sent them a letter, an email, and I said, hey, I'd really love to, I didn't know what stage meant, which means basically intern, but I was like, I'd like to intern for you. It never happened, right? Like, I think it was like a wishy-washy, oh, I've got a thesis to turn in, and they were like, who is this chick? And it didn't happen here in D.C., and I moved to Atlanta and walked into a restaurant called Bacchanalia, owned by James Beard award-winning chef Ann Quattrano. And I just stared in the kitchen, and I knew that I wanted to be there. I had always wanted to be in the kitchen from a young age, but didn't really understand that desire demand until I was older. And I wrote her a letter, and I just said, look, I'll do whatever it takes. You want me to clean your floors? You want me to candy 1,000 apples a day, which I did. whatever you want me to do, I will do it. And she, I feel like at that was a different time. I get emails like that now, and maybe fewer went that way in 2005, but she called me that night. I guess she had a pastry cook that had quit, and they needed someone. And she goes, look, this email is very funny, but I need someone, and I'm willing to train you if you're willing to work. So you have a job and you start tomorrow. And that was really the start of my career. I'm so grateful that someone opened the door to me to give me the opportunity to succeed and fail. That was a really important turning point in my life and my career and finding that passion to do what I love to do every day.
So how long were you working in her kitchen?
I worked there through 2007, and then I went back in 2010 to help her open another restaurant. So on and off for a few years. And she has a number of restaurants in Atlanta, so it wasn't just Bacchanalia. It was Star Provisions. It was her fine dining restaurant, Quiñones. It was Float Away Cafe, and then Abattoir when that was open. So I really helped in a lot of different parts of her various restaurants.
And rewinding a little bit more, did you grow up around food? What was it like in the Koslow household?
The Efron Koslow household was a household of canned mushrooms and corned beef in a bag, and Tyson. Is that an ooh? No, I thought I heard an ooh somewhere. You know, it was, my mom is a single mom, and she worked tirelessly, and the food that she made was simple and what she could do, you know? Mm-hmm. So to honest, and also I grew up as a competitive figure skater. Actually, eating wasn't something that I was totally familiar with, or like trying ranges of food, because it was always about eating for fuel, not eating for enjoyment. So once I stopped figure skating was when I started to like explore the thing that I had never explored. I was like, oh, that is interesting. What is that? Because before it was, you know, cocoa, chicken salads, and very simple deli counter food.
Got you.
Yeah.
And your grandparents had a deli?
They had a line of grocery stores in Richmond, Virginia called Koslow's. And then my grandfather was the CEO of Rich Foods, but the canning division. So he really ran what now has become like a global business in canned foods. So who knew that it was in my blood?
Yeah.
And my dad has, when I was very little, was like, do not go into this business. And of course, what do? You're like, I'm going to go into this business. yeah.
That is, I don't think we ever knew about the history of grocery canning in your family. So it's interesting to see how that carried through the generations.
And you know what? I grew up going to Richmond, Virginia to visit them. They had already sold their grocery stores, and it was something I really didn't know about them. They were older, and only my dad and my aunt were like, look, this is what they did when you were little or before your time, and this is how we grew up with our mother doing all the accounting and our father in the grocery store and
from all hours of the day. And I'm like, oh, this is why I'm at Squirrel all hours of the day. It's just like, you don't even realize that it's a part of your DNA, and then it comes back to refresh itself. Yeah.
Totally. Wow. I'm sure there's a lot that is meaningful for you there as you've explored, you know, as your career has taken off in cafes and preserves, and just to know that history.
You know, what's so interesting is that it's a different industry now, you know? Like, we want to talk about what it means to be in food service, whether it's providing hospitality or providing produce and providing ways for people to eat well or better. And that was just, you know, it was a very humble profession. And somehow this is now something that is not only humble, but it's something that can elevate a person into a different status. So I think about that a lot with them, that these were people that were doing it out of, you know, necessity, out of doing something that they were business people. I don't know that for them it was as much about, like, the passion of food as it is for me.
Yeah, you've talked about occupation versus vocation.
Yeah, yeah.
And perhaps for them it was occupation.
Absolutely.
And for you it's vocation.
Yeah.
Interesting. And so how and when did you go from working in the fine dining space in Atlanta to making jams? And what was that transition like?
I left Abattoir on January 1st of 2011. And while I was at Abattoir, I was working on Squirrel. So my partner Scott, who does all the design for Squirrel, he was designing the jars and so my partner Scott was designing all the jars, and I was back east helping set up some kind of structural stuff with Abattoir and working on recipes for canning. And then I came back to LA, and 3 months later, Squirrel, as the canning company, started. I knew that I had done a lot of preservation when I was working in the South. It was a really large part of what made her restaurants tick. So it felt like a very honest transition for me, knowing how major the farmers markets were in LA, and how much produce I could work with. And that seemed like a good start, the jam. And slowly I realized that I had to open my doors and evolve beyond just having the canning company. And breakfast and lunch seemed like the right move. It would have felt weird to go from canning company to fine dining dinner, you know? So, I don't know, it somehow worked.
Toast is the perfect vehicle for jam.
Yeah, yogurt, also a great vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Love it. And so that brings us to our next point about, you know, how you've brought your style into your business and innovation. Because I think for so many of us, not just in LA, but across the country, your dishes are iconic. We have the sorrel pesto rice bowl. Mm-hmm. We have the ricotta and brioche toast. There's cabouleh, which is your take on tabbouleh.
Yeah.
And they're incredibly delicious, versatile, and so substantial, and really everything we want to eat. I think when we think, personally, when I think of perfect food, yours comes to mind, and it is, you know, it's not the classic definition of perfect, it's just, this is exactly what I'm craving, and I feel so good eating it. Mm-hmm. So my question is, tell us about your creative process. How did you come up with these dishes, and, you know, why are they mainstays to this day on your menu?
Great question. I think some of the dishes are based on nostalgia. So I grew up eating like blintz at Catella Deli in Long Beach. That is the ricotta toast. And obviously when you think about jam, you have to think about how to utilize it. And so part of it was trying to think about where it goes in a dish. I now see ricotta toast everywhere, all over the world. And I think that is an incredible thing to see. I'm always excited to see the dish on other people's menus, and also to see how they take what we've done and maybe elevate it or change it to make it theirs. But it also gives us more of like a landing place to say, this is we've planted this flag of
home of the ricotta toast.
Home of the ricotta toast is true. And the sorrel pesto rice bowl is based around actually a dish that I had in, it's a foie gras salmon and sorrel dish that is stuck with me the moment I had it. And I was like, this is a sauce that can be used everywhere. So I think there's competing things that go in my mind. Like, what are nostalgic dishes that I crave? And also, what are techniques and tricks I've picked up along the way that are actually really can elevate a dish into a different world? And Stuart Borza, who has State Bird and Progress, he always says, you know, you have to stay two steps ahead of everyone. Like, put these recipes in a book, let people play around with them, but know that you're also playing around to figure out what those next craveable things are. So, you know, that, I think that that is a really big thing for me. We're actually closed right now. We're remodeling. It's the first time we've closed in the 7 years we've opened. And this time is actually time that we've been developing new dishes and new things that I think will become new mainstays for people, which I'm very excited about. And I'm excited to share them too.
It's really admirable that your perspective on seeing ricotta toasts all over Instagram and at different cafes is like, this is cool. This means that we're making a difference, mm-hmm. rather than being like, this is ours.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that way about a lot of times people go, how do you do that? And then the next question is, oh, you don't have to share it if you don't want to, you know? Mm. And to me, I think we need to be more open source. You know, we need to be able to share this information with other people so that they can grow, and also that you're forced to think about your next steps, you know?
Yeah.
How are you going to develop the next thing? So, share.
Yeah.
Collaboration over competition.
Mm-hmm.
It's a core tenet here at Pineapple Collaborative.
Okay. All right.
See what we did there? awesome. No, it's very inspiring to see that philosophy. And, you know, Squirrel has been a beacon for creativity and inspiration. And I think it is because you are so open source and always thinking about the next big thing.
Also, so. if I was trying to harbor all of that, I want to live positively.
Yeah.
You know, I want to live in a place where I can continue to play around and explore. And of course, you see other people doing it and you're like, you know where you got that idea, you
right.
know, and you can be like that. But also, this is a word world. This is a world where we are fully, you know, I don't want to say we're ripping people. We're ripping each other off all the time, but we're collecting the information that seems interesting to us and developing it in our own way. And mm-hmm. I think that is the human form. You know,
it's the art of steel.
The art of steel. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we're going to take a quick break. We are sitting with Jessica Koslow of Squirrel, and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
And the song you're listening to right now is called Bring a Little Love by Kiedo. That's K-I-E-D-O.
Full Service Radio. Hey, welcome back to Pineapple Radio. I am one of your hosts, Atara. We are sitting here with one of our all-time biggest heroes, Jessica Koslow. She is behind Squirrel, a restaurant we pine for. We're talking to her about her style, identity, and values around food. So we wanted to ask you, Jessica, about design. We are very inspired by the design world, and we've been inspired by the Squirrel design specifically. Everything from your totes, swag, your branding, the cookbook, it's all just so beautiful. So tell us about the process of developing a brand identity for Squirrel.
I think that the brand identity of Squirrel continues to evolve just like the food does. A little bit of a backstory is that I started Squirrel with my partner, Scott Berry. And Scott went to CalArts and is fully in the design world, just how I'm fully in the food world. And what it's created is this beautiful marriage of parts. So I can focus really on the boundary pushing of what we're doing in food, and I let him fly with the boundary pushing of design. So, you know, our website is constantly evolving. If you go on the menu, like, it scrolls over and you see photos of the food. Our plates are designed in-house. All of our biodegradables are designed. Our swag, it's true. The jars that Squirrel has, even our cookbook is fully designed in-house. Our new cookbook, which is Squirreling Away, a canning book that'll come out next year, not only will he have designed it all, but all the photography is from him as well.
Wow.
And what it creates is just a really... It's dynamic. It's ever changing. It's ever evolving. And he's as neurotic about design and what's happening in the design world. Even ABC Dynamo, like, what is that font, and how that font is like the font that everyone wishes they were using. You know, and that's the thing that I don't know. You know, and to me, you know, I love Juan Moreau, and I love to go to museums, and I love Laura Owens, and these, I am fully a lover of the art world, but I also know I'm more of an appreciator, and he's someone who's an artist. So it's really, Squirrel is a passion project. It's incredible to see it continue to evolve, and I also think that helps to keep Squirrel fresh. Restaurants typically have a lifespan, and it's when they open the doors, the menu kind of stays. Of course, there's some specials that change, but the branding is the branding of the restaurant when it opened. And to see Squirrel evolve in the way that it has, it's cool. It's very different than when it started, and that's what you want, or that's what I want.
Totally.
Yeah.
And It is unique to put resources into design, and from day one mm-hmm. to this day. I think it's a question that we at Pineapple get a lot, which is what is something that, you know, someone who's starting a business should think about that maybe they haven't considered to run a successful business? And I think for us at Pineapple, investing in creative, from, you know, a brand identity to Atara being on the team as a designer, photographer, artist full time, it gives us flexibility and an ability to express ourselves as we evolve rather than something static.
I think usually restaurants end up hiring a creative company to create branding and identity for them, and then that's it. You know, they're on a contract, they do their job, they go. And the people that are running the restaurant are stuck doing the Instagram feed, and they're, you know, still trying to run a restaurant 7 days a week. To have someone like Scott, who is the, you know, I can say, look, today I want to do a post that is based around being closed. And he'll end up spending all day doing three posts that are design related about being closed. But you know what? No one else is doing that. And it gives value to the design process and to the care in which we think about the restaurant. And it's just different.
Totally. You know? I mean, squirrel is an experience. It's some totally edible, but it's also visual. And, you know, how does...
It's an experience, you're right. It's also on the corner of Virgil and Marathon, which is a highly trafficked street in Los Angeles that is full of character. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of sensory overload when it comes to squirrel.
And can you give us any hints about what the remodel might unveil?
I wish it unveiled more, trust me. Because we now have the whole building and we're doing Squirrel Away, which is a market with food to go. Mm. Unfortunately, that's not in this remodel. This remodel is just, you know, more structural, cleaning up the pieces, giving it a haircut. Mm-hmm. So like patching, roofing, some kitchen floor. It's unfortunately not as joyful as we would love to talk about. But the thing is that it needs to be done for the future of the restaurant. So
cool.
It's structural.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about your next project a little later mm-hmm. into this conversation. But for now, I want to switch gears into the values part of our conversation. Again, at Pineapple, we really look through the lens of how women express their style, identity, and values through food. And we've touched on, you know, Jessica's background, identity, her style through her restaurant and overall Squirrel brand. And now let's dig into values, because I think that's a huge part of Squirrel. It's not just something beautiful. There's also substance there, working with farmers, working with the neighborhood, the community, how her team operates. And that's everything we pine for here at Pineapple. So starting with sourcing, because you are at the forefront of California cooking and produce is king or queen in Cali. And we want to know more about your philosophy on sourcing and how you work with farmers. Mm-hmm. And again, this is everything from fruits and vegetables to heritage grains.
Okay. And also dairy and protein. So I guess a couple things. One is that in the restaurant, I find that I want to serve people what I want to eat myself. And that has been the guiding principle of Squirrel, which is, if I don't want to eat it, I don't want to serve it. And that means even that the dairy, the milk, the cream is organic from Strauss. These are high-cost items that throw my food cost way overboard. And I think that is something, as consumers, you need to think about when you're going to a restaurant. Where do you want to support? Where do you want to give your money? Do you want to give to a restaurant that's actually sourcing well? And you can kind of figure it out by the restaurant you go to. And that is a guiding principle for me and how I choose where I want to eat and how I choose how I want to feed the community at large. And then it goes into produce. I think the great thing about starting Squirrel, it has been creating huge relationships with farmers, because I can take such a large amount of fruit off of them. I have created friends. Mm. We, as a small restaurant, take more than most big, if not all big restaurants in Los Angeles, because we're canning 35,000 jars a year still at Squirrel. And they are so happy to offload to us that we also become an integral part of the food community. The hard thing is that the seasons have been changing a lot in LA. And even though people are like, oh, you don't have seasons. I mean, the thing is that this year when it was supposed to be cold, we were having hot snaps. When it was supposed to be hot, we were having cold snaps. And it was creating issues for a lot of farmers, that major farmers that we came to look for at the market every week were not there. They were taking it off. They were closing their doors. They were leaving the industry. And that has been a very challenging thing, is how many years can these farmers have small crops before they wonder if they're in the right industry? So really finding other items so let's say they had a smaller crop of Blenheims that year. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're also supporting the other crops that they're growing in that farm. Okay, so I can't have that, but I can have the arugula that you're growing in large format and large quantity. So it is also about being malleable and being able to change direction at any cost at any time so that you can help to support farmers in what they're growing.
Yeah, that's really important because, you know, farmers across the country are facing unique climate challenges. Mm-hmm. Like here on the East Coast, for example, May and June were incredibly rainy and produce just rotted in the ground for many farmers. And, you know, what does that mean for their livelihood? What does it mean for the restaurants, you know, that source from them? And how do we get creative in this era of where nothing is for sure when it comes to the weather and how we can grow the food we want to eat?
And we talked about how, you know, CSAs are actually really important because they allow for you to probably get produce that you may not have been comfortable with or know what to do with, but it's providing an outlet for farmers to grow certain produce and provide it to you, and you as consumers learn how to work with it. I was also talking earlier about how important it is, again, for that open source sharing. There's a lot of chefs that are fermenting. I mean, fermentation is a huge part of what we do at Squirrel. It's the preserved lemons that are in our sorrel pesto. It's the lacto-fermented hot sauce that makes their crispy rice special. And this fermentation is most of the time out of sight of the health department. There's the regulation groups in the country really don't know how to parse through what it means to lacto-ferment. So, you know, we need open source HACCP plans. Chefs all around the U.S. are fermenting in secret, and it's causing us to not be able to utilize our farming resources in a much more dynamic way. If we were able to legitimize it through HACCP plans that were more readily available to us so that we could understand how to create these truly systematic fermentation areas, we could be a much bigger resource to farmers.
Because that gives you the ability to say, hey, I'll take all of this one crop that you have in abundance.
Right now, because I know you're not going to have it next week because it's going to, you know, disappear. Mm-hmm. It's something that restaurants need to incorporate into our plan, and it would help farmers, it would help our bottom line, it would be it would help our guts with lactobacillus. There's so many ways that fermentation actually should be a part of restaurant culture, and mm-hmm. is kind of being stifled at this moment because of the lack of understanding and knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So this is sort of the next issue that might be coming up.
Yeah, this is a big goal for me, you know, is to try to figure out how to make HACCP plans more readily available to chefs and to restaurants so that we can develop programming that is legitimized and create more of an outlet for farmers. Mm-hmm.
Have you found any chefs that want to keep that information proprietary?
I bet. Yes. I mean, everyone wants to talk about their secrets, but it's all like talking, and I really want to put it out there. And when I say secrets, it's more, I don't need to know what ratio of salt you're adding to your beets to turn them into, you know, kraut. That's fine. But what I do want to know is what is the system that we need to put in place to actually do that?
Right.
That will be legitimized by any, you know, health department that walks in. It's deep, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's an inspiring mission, though. Again, this is, you know, a way to take the work that you're doing, not just in making the food beautiful, the design beautiful, but the larger mission of Squirrel and sharing it with the community around you. Yeah. All for the better of our climate and our world. It's really inspiring.
Well, hopefully that happens soon.
Yeah.
Because that's something that we want to put in place for Squirrel and Squirrel Away. And once we have that in place, it will be open source for anyone who wants it.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right, cool. So we want to ask you a question about what's coming next for you. So your fans have been long awaiting your next project, Tell, which is a Cali cuisine rooted in Jewish food. It sounds amazing. You've been very forthcoming with the challenges that that project has brought on. So can you share about what happened and mm-hmm. what's coming up in the project?
Yeah.
I've learned so much this year.
I partnered with a woman that is really inspiring, and her family is in construction. They had a building that they were leasing on the west side of Los Angeles, and she was going to build it, and that was their job, and of course I was going to chef it, and Scott was designed it, and it was a beautiful marriage. She got into a large conflict with the landlord. There was a just tension between the two of them to the point where she didn't want to invest in his building. Unfortunately, Tell was not all of the building. It was just a component of it. And so the offer was, look, if you want to go in there, you can. We had all of our permits. We were ready to build. We had been sitting on it. And I was like, what is happening? Why aren't we building? We have our permits. We have liquor licenses for both operations of the space. It was ready to go. And she says, like, look, you can take over, but you'll need to find new investors, and you're going to have to take on the whole building, which is impossible.
Wow, yeah.
And that was $100,000 a month in rent, and wow. It was beyond the capacity of the project, you know? And it was a hard decision, but I couldn't stay there. There was no ability for me. It was really my hands were tied.
Right.
And I had been on the farm, which was a component of the project and is also like where she lived, on Thursday planting with our farmer. And then Sunday I got an email, and I never saw her again.
Wow.
Yeah. So that is what happened. And it was a big moment for me of like, wow, okay. I'd spent 2 years of my life building Tell, designing it, designing the menu, being thoughtful about the direction of what that meant. And I wasn't going to let it just die. So I found a new location. And the new location is on the east side of Los Angeles. The location is beautiful, and also it's going to take a moment. You know, it's going to take a moment to do. So I'm being very patient, which is challenging for me, because obviously there's a lot of expectations about what Tell is and that it should be already have evolved. And but I'm being patient. So Tell is happening. It's just taking its moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And will there still be a farm component to it?
Unfortunately, not for now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The space that we have does have farming in on the side, but it's not at that capacity. It was mm-hmm. like 3 acres of beautiful land in Malibu, and mm-hmm. this is a plot next to the building. So it's just different. It's different, and I hope that we do end up with a farming component at some point. But it's good. Yeah, everything in due time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you'll still have things growing, edible mm-hmm. things growing next to the restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Just not at that capacity.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well, it's still nice to make the connection between what you're eating and knowing it comes from the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true.
Awesome. So on that note of lessons learned and this journey of entrepreneurship, being a business owner, finding your voice, the Pineapple community is full of entrepreneurs and wantrepreneurs, as we mm-hmm. like to say. So what advice do you have for us who have a creative vision and want to bring it into the world successfully?
Well, I think that word successfully is interesting. I think failure can be success. I think in this journey, it's shown me that wantrepreneur is such a great word. You have to want it. You really, really do. You have to want it, and you have to be willing to sacrifice your time and and give all of yourself to it. And I think the best thing I did was to just give myself over to the process. That was a very scary thing. When I decided that I was going to go full board squirrel and do squirrel, that was the scariest leap of faith I've ever done. And it was hard because it was not necessarily successful at first, you know. And even with Tell not happening on the West Side, I learned such valuable lessons about trust and who to bring in as partners, and that life does go on, and that Squirrel is really my baby and very important. That's why it's getting such a little bit of a haircut right now. and to really value the things you have and to learn from the lessons. So taking everything in stride and not feeling that defeat. You know, I think it's really important to your process, or my process.
Yeah. So when you do have a moment where you're like, man, this did not go according to plan, and those are the moments where some people quit, or just you could beat yourself up for days, how do you recover? How do you say, like, all right, this happened, we're going to keep moving on?
That's such a good question. How do you keep moving on? I mean, I think you value yourself and the work that you've done, right? For me, like, I know the importance of the work. And even if I hit a snag, I know that I just have to keep going, you know? I know that sometimes if something can happen that is... There's a couple ways that people can go about a hardship or a lesson maybe you didn't want to learn. One, you can stay in bed and be like, oh God, like, I don't want to get out of bed today, which is fine. Take a day, sit there, wallow. But like, why wallow when there's so much good, you know? And that has been, for me, the way to look at it is like, there is so much good. And the purpose and the focus of this life is to do something that you want to do and that you're proud of doing. Because at the end of the day, that's all you have, you know? So there'll be moments where it feels really tough, and that's just life. If it was going great all the time, it'd be hard to understand everything else. So I don't know. Yeah.
Appreciate those words of wisdom. I think, you know,
it's home.
We're about a year into our business full time. Which is really exciting. And there certainly have been moments where you're like, I just want to quit. This is really hard.
Yeah.
And someone said to us, like, or actually it was Ben Horowitz's book. I'm blanking on the name right now. Apologies. But essentially he's a venture capitalist in Silicon Valley himself, started tons of startups, and, you know, has invested in Airbnb and Facebook. And he said the number one thing that I see in all successful entrepreneurs is they don't quit. That is the only common trait of all of these people. So just to remind yourself, like, take a day off, or, you know, find your inspiration again. Don't quit.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. Great news. I'm not doing it. I feel, Ben, it's happening.
Stay in the game always. Cool. Well, that was an awesome conversation. Really cool learning about your history, your style, your philosophy on sourcing, which is endlessly inspiring to us. What we're going to do now is do a little Spitfire interview. So the idea here is just to get to know Jessica a little bit more, and it's, you know, really just the first thing that comes to your mind.
Okay.
We'll ask you about 5 questions. Great. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. A woman you pine for in food.
I mean, so many people. I love Paula Wolford so much. I love her even in this moment in time. She's just a special being.
Awesome.
Your favorite women-made food product?
Or female farmers that you work with?
Yeah. That's a great... Okay, so that is a great one. There is... Well, the women at Mud Creek, I know that is the one that shows the Pakistani mulberries that I just got a bunch of. Those women are... So, their farm was a bit destroyed by the fire last year. And they are every example of Ben Horowitz's don't quit philosophy. They have found a way to maintain the majority of their land and be at the market every week and still have the most gorgeous produce. So mm-hmm. Mud Creek, that family is just special.
How often do you go visit farms?
I wish more often, you mm-hmm. know. I'm finding this time that we're closed as the time to actually visit some of the restaurants that I had wanted to go experience cool. in LA. But getting out to farms is a little bit more challenging mm-hmm. Based on time. I see them at the farmer's market every
yeah,
week, but definitely want to spend more time out there, yeah. see what they're growing and why.
Awesome. What is yeah. your favorite farmer's market?
The Santa Monica Farmer's Market is, to me, one of the best. The Santa Barbara Farmer's Market on mm. Saturday is extraordinary. And a lot of those farmers who are in the Central Valley who I wish would come down to LA are like, I don't need to do it. I'm going to be right here close to home. So Santa Barbara on Saturday is one of those ones that you go up to and you're like, ugh, all these farmers from Ojai and Carpinteria, and they're all right here, and come to LA, please. So mm-hmm. that one is a great one.
Cool.
Awesome. Your go-to pantry and fridge item. So two items, one in your pantry, one in your fridge.
Got it, you guys. cultured pickles up in Berkeley, they do such incredible fermentation. And whenever I can get my hands on any of the like kohlrabi kraut or kraut that they're doing, that is something that I like to have in my fridge from them. I am a big fan of walnut oil as oil to add to, like, it just adds such beautiful flavor to a salad with, and it gives me the oil that I need. So an Ojai, a walnut oil is something I like to add.
Mm. Beautiful. Your all-time favorite jam flavor?
I mean, Persian mulberry, that is like the gold, the 24 karat of jam. So that would be it.
Cool. Our last question is, where can our audience find you?
In the
I'm
world?
I'm sure most of our audience already has found you. But yeah.
Oh, you mean online? Like, yeah. Where can I? Okay, yeah. So personally, I'm Prosciutto Snacks. That's what I am on Instagram. It's named after my dog, Monk, and how I feel like he's living his best life eating prosciutto snacks. Squirrel LA and squirrella.com. That is where you can find us, and typically I'm at the restaurant every day, so if you see me, say hi. Don't yeah, be scared.
Awesome. Good to know. Yeah. Next time I'm in line, I'll shoot you a little wave. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
You know me.
Yeah. Well, this has been the conversation of our dreams on Pineapple Radio.
Truly.
And I don't say that lightly.
We've been trying to have a conversation. We've been trying to do something in DC together for a long time, actually. Yeah. And it just worked out. So I am so happy to be here. I'm so happy to be here with you. We finally did it, guys.
Yay.
We did it.
Thanking our lucky stars.
Good.
Yeah.
And we can't wait for your dinner tonight at Rose's Luxury and our pineapple event with you tomorrow. So if you're coming to that, we'll see you there. Please say hello to myself and Atara, of course, Jessica. She wants to get to know the DC food community and food loving community. And we also have another event coming up in June, believe it or not, with Salad for President. Julia Sherman is visiting at us next week on June 25th, Monday evening. Come hang out. We're going to learn how to compose beautiful salads and talk about artists and food, and it's going to be a great time. So June 25th, see you there. And we'll see you next time on Pineapple Radio. And as always, send us feedback. We're at Pineapple Collaborative on Instagram. We're hot on the DM, so hit us up there. Send us emails and write reviews about our show on iTunes. We're excited to hear from you. Always try to write you back, maybe not in a day, but at least a week. And thank you so much for being part of what we do.
We'll see you next time.